Hey, I'm Monty Hellman, and you're listening to Film Wax Radio.
Everybody, this is Adam Sharkoff, your host of Film Wax Radio, the independent film talk show / podcast. This is a great episode, number 277, and I have two great dynamic guests on this show. I have, coming up in a little bit, Joel Patrykas. This is Joel's second visit to the podcast. He was on episode number 184, where he came on and he talked about his previous film. It was called Ape. And who knew it was going to be the second in the trilogy? We had no idea. We never discussed that there was a third film that was coming out. You know, so right now, Buzzard is out. Again, Ape, which came out a couple of years ago. And before that, there was a short. It was called Coyote. It's out there somewhere. I'm sure you'll be able to see it. They just had a screening the other night here in Brooklyn at BAM of all three together in one fell swoop. I couldn't get the show up in time to promote that, but Joel was in town a couple of days ago. He had to race back to his hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan, to be there for the big premiere there, which is today, Friday, the 6th of March. And so he couldn't be here in New York for the big premiere, but he did make it to the BAM screening of all three of the films, the short, Coyote, followed by Ape, and then the new film, Buzzard. All three star Joshua Burge, his leading man, and who's now moving on to big Hollywood movies. And we're going to talk about all that and more when the Joel Patrykas segment comes up in just a little bit. But first, I brought on Robert Green some time ago to talk about his latest documentary. It's his fourth feature documentary called Actress. Well, this is not Robert's fourth visit. He has been on the podcast three times, but instead, what we're going to do, as Actress now is available digitally, is that we're bringing on the actress herself, Brandi Burri. For fans of The Wire, you may recall her. She was on that show where she played Teresa D'Agostino on that very popular HBO series. And then she was a neighbor of Robert Greene's. And Robert said, hey, let's do a film about, you know, your life right now. And it just so happened that there was a lot going on in her life at that moment. So we're going to talk about that. What a great lady she is, Brandi. We met few months ago at a party, and I said, come on to the podcast. She said, absolutely, and she's a woman of her word. She came on. We had a great time. We met at the offices of the Blue Man Group, which is like an off-Broadway show that I saw at least 15 years ago, maybe more, and it is an institution here in New York City, and her partner now is a drummer for the Blue Man Group. So we met at their offices and had this conversation. I think it went off really well. So we're going to talk to Brandi about her life and her career and making Actress. And then we're going to talk to, again, Joel Patrykas. Now, let me just say that also, Buzzard, if it's not in your neck of the woods, it is also available digitally on various platforms like iTunes and Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. So you have both films, Actress and Buzzard, available to you right now. I don't mean this moment. I mean after you listen to the show. You can go and have a double feature this weekend of those two terrifically entertaining films, both independent, by the way. So that's the show. We're just getting ready. In a few days, I'm going to be heading out to Austin, Texas. And thank God, if you don't live in New York City, you should feel good about that at the moment. I mean, no, you know, I'm going to put a clip up of I was just stepping out of a movie tonight, in fact, which is not unusual for me. What they've done, started to do is the publicists know you're going to be inundated with going to screenings when you go to South by Southwest. So what they've started to do, and this is great, is they've started to pre-screen some films for you if you're going to South by. And so tonight I went to see a movie called A Wonderful Cloud, which was directed by Eugene Kotcharenko. I know Eugene because some time ago, I happened to see his last film and reached out to him. I contacted him we kind of ended up corresponding online. Anyway, he used to be in a relationship with Caitlin Scheel. And so this movie is a kind of a reimagined version, I guess, of the relationship in the past and now. So, of course, Kate Lynn is in so many great films, and she's in this film. And I just went to the screening tonight of this movie. Again, it's called The Wonderful Cloud. So now I don't have to worry about seeing it at South by Southwest, so that's good. But I'm going to have Eugene and Kate Lynn on the show, I hope. That's the plan with that film. But anyway, I'm walking out afterwards, and where I was in the West Village. Oh, my goodness. We had snow all day long today. And it was so gorgeous in the West Village. It was just phenomenal. You know, I took some video. I'm going to post it up. I'll put it up. I'll put it on Facebook. But you got to take a look at it. I was walking across Leroy Street, you know, which is gorgeous. And take a look at that video. Anyway, so I'm going to South by Southwest in a few days, and I've got so much lined up. I don't even want to get into it at this stage, but we'll talk about it in the next show or two as I put them out from Austin, Texas. So right now, let's go into the conversation with Brandy, and then I'll be back to reintroduce the segment with Joel.
I'm amazed at how many rules there are. And how we all agree to them. Even when we don't. Check. Coat, check. Okay. Hat, check. You're so busy playing house. At the beginning, it was just such a new adventure.
It, but it sure felt like the first taste of spring out there.
I'm ready to step out again. I'm ready to become an actor again.
Mid to late 30s, is that me? Oh, the neighborhood beauty. Am I the neighborhood beauty?
No. So this was before The Wire.
This is way before The Wire.
Yeah, this was. I was in graduate school, and I came to New York. I should have known that New York was not for me. I was perfectly aged for the role, and I'm sure someone younger got it.
And then he said, I know who you were with. I thought everything I was working towards was finished.
Was I going to be? It's me. I tend to break things.
Welcome to FilmWax Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. Really.
I think Robert was on two or three times.
Yep.
One of my first guests when I really had no idea what, you know, I was doing.
Well, actually, he was a guest on it at the beginning of this actress run. And so I hadn't experienced any of the film festivals yet and all that stuff. And so I was like, wow, who does he know? How does he get on these things? And yeah. So it's really cool to now be here.
Oh, yeah. No, it's nice.
It's an initiation.
Yeah. And I get a lot out of talking to the subjects of films, too. But you also have the unique perspective of being already in front of a camera for many years and having.
Yeah. But this was, I definitely came into this as a subject, which was fascinating. Because the acting and performative part of what came out of the movie really happened organically. We didn't discuss it necessarily at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I just thought my neighbor, you know, had an odd idea, it was going to be more documentary style. Like I thought he was just going to film me doing my thing, and so the performative aspects of the film of actors came out as we started filming, you know.
I think what may, you know, people haven't seen it that are listening, you're saying that Robert Greene, who is the director of Actress,
he gave you specific directions of things that you were going to do that day or scenes that he'd like to shoot or...
You know, he definitely had more of a conceptualized idea of what he was looking for because this is his fourth feature documentary. And so I think he came in knowing, you know, first of all, he knew he needed to create a narrative. Mm-hmm. And so in his mind, I'm sure he thought, oh, if I could get you doing your dishes and if I could, you know, so, but right. I didn't know any of that going in.
Right.
And he would, when we first started, he really tiptoed around the project because we were both doing it on our free time. You know, no one was going to get paid for this or anything like that. And there was no crew. It was just, he had a camera and was like, hey, you know, and so at first he would say things like, well, what if you ever feel like being filmed, give me a call. And I thought, who would ever feel like being filmed?
And I mean, if they did, who would admit to it?
Right. I mean, I just thought, that's not how these things work, Robert. Yeah. Like, should I tell you as a documentary filmmaker, like, unless you give me a time, I'm not going to want you to come over and invade my life.
This is the exact opposite to reality television.
Yes. This is exact opposite.
Right, where it seems like they can't get enough of that camera.
Right, and it's embedded in your life, and it becomes so, like, it's this whole performance. That's what I didn't want, and I thought that's what maybe he was looking for. Because just knowing that he would say, when he started watching The Wire, that's what created the whole
idea. Because he knew you?
Because he didn't know... He heard about The Wire forever and hadn't watched it and was kind of like not interested because he assumed it was going to be, oh, whatever, this cult thing that everyone likes. I'm sure I'm going to hate it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, he and his wife started watching it, fell in love with it, became engrossed. And then, you know, he came out the next day and was like, you're that woman.
He knew you were an actor and he must have known you were on The Wire.
Yeah, but he didn't. He only knew me as a mom.
Right.
I mean, and I really... was completely under the radar about being an actor. I mean,
Wearing your Wire t-shirts.
Exactly. I mean, it was so, that's what made it fascinating to him because he really knew me as a human being that was not in any way.
Okay. Well, The Wire, by the way, was an HBO series that took place in Baltimore, if I'm correct. Right. And it ran for like 5-6 seasons?
Yes. I was on seasons 3 and 4. And I think it ran for 5 seasons.
So it was like at the height of that show's popularity then. And your character was a...
Teresa D'Agostino. She was a political consultant for her friend running for mayor. So it was a great
Was it kind of like an evil
storyline? Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of typical. Hard edge, sexy woman. And I had as a side note, had an affair with McNulty, one of the other major characters. You know, I kept the story going, whatever.
All right. So you had a good arc.
I had a great arc, yes.
What years were those seasons? What years?
I have no idea. You know, we shot them, and I was living in Washington, D.C., and so we shot them, and then they would come out so late, long, like a year after. So
whether it was in the mid-2000s or late 2000s?
Mid-2000s?
Mid-2000s. First decade of it? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so just giving kind of a context. And now... Actress, the story of the documentary was shot then, if that's the case, like 7-8 years later. You've left the industry because you felt the rejection.
I became a mom. I got pregnant whilst shooting The Wire.
Yeah.
And in between, I did a lot of theater and things like that.
Like in New York City?
Mostly regional. Like I said, I was in Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I went on a tour. I did a tour, a Sherlock Holmes play by Stephen Dietz. It was a wonderful role where I got to, you know, wear corsets and wigs and that kind of period piece.
Sure.
Working with great British actors, which I enjoy. I always wanted to be a theatrical actress. I never really watched much television, and I went to a liberal arts school, so... Then I did a run in Aspen, Colorado, where I took my child. But then I kept doing the audition thing and realized that, like, young women are playing the roles. It just started bugging me that I just started not wanting to really be a part of the business. I see these movies out now. I mean, I can't believe they're still going on. I don't know the movie Focus at all, but I'm like with Will Smith and and this young Australian. And I'm like, are you kidding? Yeah. She's 24. Where the hell are the female roles? He's 46 and she's 24.
Yeah.
Why is that? And why don't we just stop the nonsense?
Yeah.
People are sick of seeing it. It's just
And everybody, you know, they come on this show. I mean, I don't have on Will Smith, but I mean, everybody that comes on the show, when they reference their favorite movies, they talk about Cassavetes and they talk about, you know, I don't know, all the, you know, filmmakers from the 70s and 80s, whatever. And when they were still casting women that looked like real women, and they were in their 30s and 40s, and they weren't these perfect young...
So
and some
malleable.
Of them were quite talented.
Of course, but they're 24. I was quite talented at 24, and I did amazing jobs. But my first professional theater job was when I was 24, and now looking back, I was paired with men in their early 50s.
Yeah.
And that's when I started noticing it. I started going, because in the dressing room, the other women that were there was, I think, a woman in her mid-30s, and... You know, and they were both single, neither had children, and I thought, oh, but I want children, and I don't necessarily want to be single when I'm in my 30s. Oh, but if you're a successful actress, you would have to be, because there's no...
Yeah,
and I started,
there's not a lot of room.
And I realized, and I got a lot of the women didn't like me very much, and I thought, what's their problem? And I thought, oh, well, now I can see. I'm 24 years old, just fresh out of college, and I'm playing the sexy kitten that... With these men who are their 50s. And we women then turn on each other because there's only so many roles.
Yeah.
And the only women that I knew growing up in the theater, I was competing against.
Yeah.
Because there's only so many to go around. So that became an issue too, where I thought, I don't want to be this. I don't speak for all women, but when there's only one woman role to 20 man roles, then you become this, like, you have to speak for all women. Like, but no man speaks for all men.
Right.
So there's no nuance there in any of the characters.
Right. Enough is enough. And then you had, fortunately, this other wonderful alternative, which was a family, a children. I mean, it wasn't like you were giving up anything.
Well, that's...
A substantial at that moment. I understand.
Yep.
Going back a little bit, though, I want to know, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ohio.
Oh, what town?
Sandusky, Ohio.
What major town is that near?
It's near Cleveland. It's up on very
up north. Yeah.
Tip on
so
Lake
near
Erie.
Illinois.
That it's
far.
Gorgeous. Right in the middle of the state. Right. There's an amusement park there called Cedar Point. And, and we grew up. I grew up fishing. My dad owns a bait shop. Not in any way artistic that way. I mean, we
artistic.
Yeah, we don't.
In terms of bait, is that one of the arts?
No, I'm just mean we didn't like. I didn't have any actors, or I shouldn't be an actor.
Oh, I see.
Like, I didn't have any lineage.
Oh, no,
she was
right.
Just more of like.
Yeah.
You know,
sure. But you watched TV and went to movies, so
yeah.
I understand. There was regional theater, and
sure.
I mean, of course, even high school play. I mean, you
yeah,
get
that's
the bug.
What I was like—a musical theater girl.
Sure,
you know,
and so
great,
you get the
great
bug
music
that way.
Teachers and wonderful.
That's all it really takes. Sometimes is that one experience, and I can really say I can't get enough of that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
it was,
it's addictive, and
but it was also to be a part of the community. It was the arts were a big part of our small town.
Yeah,
so were there, that was nice.
And so this was like I don't know, in the 80s. Like when you were finishing?
I graduated in 92 in high school.
Oh, okay.
I'm
not asking, and I don't know how old you are. So,
I don't care, and I'm very proud to. That's the whole point.
It's true, but I've learned not to ask. But I was trying to get a context of your age in the sense of when you were young, like maybe what actresses or actors in general, maybe a couple of your favorites. I'm just curious because that can also play a part in why you might choose to pursue it. It's like you want their career, that kind of career.
Oh, I pursued it because of a music teacher that I love to sing. I actually started in a conservatory of music. So I cut my teeth on Cole Porter musicals, movies, old movies, dancers. I love to dance and sing and then
did you like those old MGM Hollywood musicals?
I mean,
and
it's funny now because I'm so far removed. For me, it was about I sang the national anthem in high school at all my events. I was in track, I was in volleyball, I was very athletic, and it was a social thing for me that we had great musical theater productions in my high school that had full orchestras and things like that. So I just wanted to be an actress, you know, that kind of big performative over the top stuff.
And then probably everybody knew you as she's going to be an actress.
She's like I had a drawing drawn of me and in my senior year by an art teacher that, you know, you're going to go. I was most musical kind of thing. And
what did your yearbook say?
Most musical. You know, that's exactly.
It's very Midwestern. This sounds like very Midwestern.
Oh, my goodness. And I was an All-American, All-Ohio cheerleader. I mean, then when I got to college, I started in conservatory, and I was following that path. Then that was the moment of rebellion where I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I mean, I want to – who am I? And I ended up transferring to Ohio University, and then I wanted to be a real actor. I wanted to forget singing and dancing. I want to do political plays. Right. I want to do stand up for gay rights. And like all of a sudden my friends changed. I became a total hippie and I became an artist. Yeah. Like there was a total the shift there where I said I rejected all the things that I all American and really found my voice as an artist. I'm so glad I did that.
Did you think going to Northwestern? That wasn't too far away.
I didn't know much. I mean, the first time I was on a plane, I was 15. The first time my mom was on a plane, she was in her 40s visiting me at a summer theater. I mean, I didn't have any vision. I'd never been to New York City, had no idea what I was getting into, you know, as a career. I just didn't have, what were the other options? Me being an education, a teacher, you know? So it was like, it was all or nothing for me.
Yeah. So did you go to New York to start auditioning?
Yeah, so then I graduated, and then I had a summer where I thought, I graduated when I was 21, so I was pretty young, you know, went through college right away, got great grades, because I always, I mean, I liked other things too, and then I went right into graduate school, so over the summer I thought, what am I going to do with my life? I'm 21 years old, had no idea how to survive in any way. I'd just been in high school and then college, and had a couple, like, jobs at TGI Fridays, you know, and was really, and my parents had no idea how to help me or support me. There was no money. So it was like, but I was invited to go back. Someone had dropped out of the program. I went to Chicago and auditioned for ERDAS, which is a grad program for actors. You audition all over the world.
Okay.
And and I got a couple offers, but still was like, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't have any money. And someone dropped out of the Ohio University program, and the head of that program saw my audition in this ERDA audition in Chicago. And so she called me and said, we'd like to offer you the position. Mm-hmm. So essentially, like all of a sudden, I was guaranteed this safety net of 3 years in college again.
Yeah, woo, right. Which you already thrived in. And
I'd already, So. And but, you know, but in undergrad, I kind of went unnoticed. I mean, I'm not that special. I was like a typical Midwest. I didn't have any great roles in undergrad. I mean, because I was trying to find my way as like, I wanted to play character roles, you know?
And they were like, play Martha in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I didn't get to do that one. No, okay. No, I didn't get to
or
do
Lady
it.
Lady Macbeth.
Things I wanted to do. And so in graduate school is when I got to finally like grow into myself, grow into being a woman and not being a kid. And we did a 1 year at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, which is a wonderful regional theater, was part of our graduate where we were interns and we just did all the understudy roles and things like that. And from there I got to perform in The Importance of Being Earnest understudy, but I had to go on, which never actually happened. So that was a big. And when I went on and did a great job, saved the theater, you know, the 600 seats or whatever that they were going to have to close the show, that's when the artistic director saw me differently than a student.
Yeah.
And from there, he hired me on several times, like as a professional actor, and I got my equity card. And,
oh, nice.
So it's a great story of just doing the work.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I think that's a big thing. The showing up and being prepared is a huge amount of being an actor.
It's a lot of work. I don't. Yeah. It's not about being a celebrity, and that's why I don't have
only,
time.
And looks, glamour. It's often. It's about, you know, actually knowing your role, knowing the play, doing the homework, being dependable type of actor, showing up, knowing the work,
and that the
knowing
story
how to talk,
getting articulating. Memorizing lines. It's very and having your body as an instrument, being in shape. You know, being ready to.
Yeah. And having a diverse set of muscles to exercise, like, or to be able to.
And also
use.
For that, being aware, like, to be able to embody different characters, you have to know a hell of a lot about the world. I have to spend time reading
history,
and I don't.
Right?
History and
huge.
Exactly. And and dialects and all these things, yeah, language, right. Music.
Yeah. I was married to an actress. She had this the same ethic, and she's finishing a Broadway play right now and on a TV series.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, but she went to NYU, where I think they also, grad acting, where I think they teach that same approach. That's what they emphasize. They're handing you those tools.
Yeah, I absolutely took my job very seriously. You know, I thought as an artist, I said I have something to say. You know, and I that you have to have that. It's not about I don't know what other people why you would get into the business if it was for celebrity, but there's so much of that now.
Right. Yeah, but you could do that on a Vine video now. So
right, exactly.
So that which is good because now, okay, you do that, and now we're going to get back to the acting here.
That's what's so great about the film.
Yeah, right. So you finished the grad program, got on a bus, showed up, found a manager, got sent to The Wire, got that role.
Nope. And you... Actually, yeah. No,
I'm kidding. Right?
I came to New York
and
started crying. I mean, I started waiting tables, pounding the pavement. Couldn't get an agent to save my life because of what I had. I had my equity card, but no one cares. And I said, how do people do this? And knew that if I stayed in New York, that I would be one in a million, and I would end up probably, you know, an alcoholic drug addict. Because all my friends that from college, from OU, had moved to New York. Most of them were gay guys. They had come to New York to finally live the life that they wanted to live. I didn't have that same, like, okay, now I can be, you know, party animals.
one of the characters in The Importance of Being Earnest, I think it was the pretentious aunt, the portentous aunt, whatever, you know what I mean, of Gwendolyn, I forget what the name of the aunt was, like, interviewing the one of the guys who, you know, was pretending to be her, whatever, and admits that he smokes. And she says, you know, every man should have a hobby.
Exactly.
So, you know, drug addiction and alcoholism is, you know, you got to have something to keep yourself busy.
Oh, yeah. And that's what made me, you know, really, you know, interesting and creative. All the drugs I did.
You moved to Washington, though, right?
Yes. So I just realized that I was not going to be happy creatively. I needed space. And so... You know, essentially, I followed a boyfriend who was living in Washington, D.C. I said, okay, I'll go there. That's when I got on The Wire. And it's best story because I had no agent. I didn't have my SAG card. And there was a local out of Baltimore, Pat Moran Casting, hired all of the extras, the locals. Uh-huh. And for some reason, David Simon, the writer, or someone, said to audition this role locally
there.
They auditioned it in London, they auditioned it in New York, they auditioned it in LA, and I didn't know any of this until after when we were at one of the premieres. David Simon's girlfriend said, are you the local hire? And I thought that was kind of a funny thing to say, and I'm like, I guess so, that I'm a local hire as opposed to but it's a testament to them, and they took a chance on me, and apparently they had seen, because I didn't hear, I auditioned, didn't know the show, didn't really care. I was planning on visiting, like, my boyfriend was coming in from Paris. It was always about boyfriends for me, life. Most life is. And so I didn't think it was a big deal, didn't know how big it was going to be. And then they called weeks later and then said, can you come back in?
Yeah.
And I thought, God, isn't that old? Isn't that over? But later that they had auditioned around, like, bigger names and LA, New York. But they didn't want a Law and Order type, and that's what they were getting by these professional actors that have agents. There's a stereotype, you know, that all women in suits plays.
Yeah. Right,
David was really wanting to not do that, so he took a risk on me. And so my friends were like, holy shit, you did it. I mean, because they all thought, what are you doing in Washington, D.C.? And I'm like, I'm going to break into the regional theater here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do good work, and people are going
to
see it.
And then I'm going to work. You're right. And then maybe it will come to New York or not.
Or it won't. Maybe I'll live in Chicago. I didn't care about the big thing. I just wanted to make a living.
Yeah, I understand. Right. It was that same approach, the kind of more practical workaday approach to just working
and
doing
happy.
Good work.
Do it for me, because I wasn't going to be happy waiting tables.
And you were never cared about the celebrity aspect.
I never cared.
But during the time that when you got on The Wire and it became such a big show, you must have went to award shows and
red carpets. Well, a little bit. I definitely got a taste of it. I got a taste of it. I would kind of like I was invited to like hip hop parties because The Wire, you know, is mostly African American. So I was like the little white girl in my, one time I got on the set at like 6 a.m. and had my like a cotton skirt and tank top and my Tevas on, you know, that's where, and by the end of that night, we were at a club in Baltimore and they're like, the cast of The Wire is in the house and Idris Elba was DJing and I'm like, how did I land? So if that, but it, again, it wasn't my scene. I didn't feel like my voice would ever be heard. I was proud to be a part of this wonderful show. And now it's actually the cult following of it. It has legs, far more reaching than we could have ever seen at the time when we were doing the show. But I got a taste of it, and I definitely rejected it. I was like, this isn't, I'm an artist. I don't, it's like I was invited to fashion shows.
Okay.
And that made me go, I really don't like fashion in a sense of like wealthy people buying fancy clothes from, it's not my thing and I don't want to represent. So part of who I was just rejected the whole thing, and probably to my detriment, to other people would say, God, you could have, because everyone's like, you need to, you know, keep working and build on it. Go if you don't do it now. And so then I started feeling like a failure all the time because I started getting auditions, but it was like with the other people auditioning were Lily Taylor and Mary Louise Parker. And so I was thrown into this and I didn't have time to, you know, do just, I just want to do some small regional theater. It was like, I went from doing nothing to being famous. So then I was competing with people that had real agents.
All of a sudden, there was no in-between time where you gradually kind of worked your way up through the audition ranks until it was like, okay, now I'm going for the lead.
Yeah, so I don't really know anyone
film or that
in the business,
or,
you know.
Yeah. Wow. And what was David Simon like?
Well, they were all really down-to-earth, amazing people because they were real people. They were journalists beforehand. They
And they weren't in Hollywood.
Not at all. We were in Baltimore and on the sets, and they hired local people, and we all of the trailers were downtown in the ghettos areas, and
what was that like? What were the folks from the community like there?
They really enjoyed it. I mean, you could sense that the bouncer, the guy that was like, what? There were times that I had to, that people would ask me for change when I'm trying to run my lines. You know, this woman's like, can I have some? And I'd have to be like, no, I'm trying to run my, you have no idea, woman. Like, I'm running my lines here. I'm going to be on HBO. Leave me alone. But I lived in a terrible part of DC at the time. I mean, I had gunshots and there was a heroin addicts on my doorsteps, lots of prostitution where I could afford to live. So for me, it was just a part of being a starving artist, I relate to all those people. It wasn't like coming in and being like, I never did the Hollywood thing either. So, I mean, but of course, being on set was really grand because you have a hair and makeup person and they took these suits and, you know, Mary, the seamstress, ripped them all apart and made them fit my body perfectly. You know, it's like, this is awesome.
And did they drive you home at the end of the day?
Yeah, they would, I mean, you always had a driver or someone. Yeah. But I drove my own car most of the time.
Okay.
You know, had my little red Grand Am, but I loved going out. Like, and then like the first day that we shot, like Dominic West was like, hey, you have a car. You know, he's like, you want to go out? I'm like, yeah, let's go out. Because, you know, after a while being driven around all the time is a little annoying. You know, sometimes you just want to go and go to the movies.
You want to be spontaneous.
You want to be spontaneous. Exactly. Yeah. But when you're, if you don't show up at the set, that'll cost them $50,000. They want to know where you are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no, I understand. Right. It's an insurance policy of their own. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was nice to have my own car. I was like, yeah, let's all go to a movie or something, you know.
But you fell in love or met someone and eventually, was this after The Wire? And then you
in the middle of season. So I knew that I was going to have another season on The Wire, but they didn't know how many episodes. I mean, it could have been one, two.
But it was the season.
But they said, your character will go through, it's going to be in season 4, but we're not shooting it until next year. These things, they were so far.
Right,
And so,
like The Sopranos sometimes would be like a year and a half between
seasons.
It was
so long in the making. And I got paid well to do The Wire, but I only shot probably shot 14 days. I mean, so you can't, you don't live your life on that. So now I'm like, okay, now I have to try to become an actor and find something to do in between. But I know I'm going to be shooting this. So now I got to go to New York and find an agent. all the guys on the show, Aiden, Dominic, you know, the people, all the other actors, like, you know, you should move to New York and you know you should get an agent now. And so yeah. I'm like, all right. So hesitantly, I left my great life in Washington, D.C., because I was working with children in the mornings, singing and stuff like that in Georgetown, and created a wonderful group of people that I felt healthy and artistic and so moved to New York, moved with a friend of mine, you know, dropped $7,000 in one day trying to sign papers and also all my savings was gone and started trying to meet with agents and just all the actors on The Wire. I would say, William Delaney, you know, can you get me an interview with your agent? Oh, sure, sure, you know. Mm. And I really had a hard time with that process, I have to admit. I, you know, going in and they'd be like, who are you? And I'm like, hi, I'm on The Wire. And they're like, what? I'm on an HBO show. You know, at that time, The Wire wasn't big. The Wire got big after. At the time, it was Sex and the City and The Sopranos. And so it really, it didn't, and my scenes hadn't aired yet when I was meeting with these agents. So they didn't really care. You know, and then they would say, I sent them, like once it did air, an agent called me back and said, you should have come in. I saw that, I saw your scene and you should have come in looking like that. Like you look fabulous. And because I came in looking like myself. I mean, I was a broke actor. I looked nice, but I don't have suits. I don't have, and I certainly am not an attorney. Like I'm an actor.
You kind of packaged already.
Yes.
Like
so
a
this
proven
is what I,
entity. That's the problem with
that's
it.
That's the fucking problem. Right? I'm like, I don't want to play Teresa D'Agostino. They don't want to think at all.
Right.
And that's what they say.
They ear peg, they got the hole, they just wanted to go like this, yes. And they collect their percent.
Yeah, so I got in a ton of, like, I went to producers'
I'm
meetings
sure not for, everybody's like that, but.
For Law and Order and all these things, you know, and so I was like, I again just felt like, fuck you. I'm rejecting this. Yeah. I rejected it and I didn't end up signing with anyone.
Okay.
And at that time, it could have been to my detriment, you know, like, why are you doing it? And then I met my partner. And so it seemed like I said, you know, can we do other things? He ran a bar in New York City,
and
we opened. And so we moved out of the city, and we're going to open some restaurants.
He had a place in the city,
yes.
And you guys wanted to move just a little north of Westchester,
exactly.
and like, you know, get a house and then open a business up there.
Yes, which we did.
And then just you do your little couple of weeks down in New York every once in a while and take some acting gigs.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Yep. And that was the plan. And.
And then Robert Greene shows up.
And then Robert Greene shows up at my door. And he's like, hey, we have to do something. And I, at the prompting of his wife, I think, because I think in a way she wanted him home. But I hung out with his wife a lot as moms.
Right.
Comparing, you know, what time our children went to bed and what we were going to cook, you know, doing
you have
the
two
knitting.
Boys? I forget.
I have a boy and a girl.
You have a boy and a girl. Okay.
Yes. And she had a boy and a girl. So, you know, Robert would come home and Deanna's like, I've been hanging out with Brandy. You know, she's telling me all these stories about The Wire and who she dated. And, you know, and so she's like, you really should do something with her. So it was really her prompting. And then they started watching the show and thought,
yeah, oh,
this is going to be
right.
Kismet, you know.
Yeah. And then HBO will air it.
that was the hope.
Was it?
No, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Well, ultimately, it's what every documentary.
You know, I mean, there were so many opportunities. You know, Robert was like, if we could get it in, you know, there were so many disappointments, even in this. He thought, if we could get this into Sundance, you know, oh, our dreams will all be made.
Yeah.
If we could get into South by Southwest, oh, and no.
Film Comet Selects, which is Lincoln Center did it, and that's pretty prestigious.
Yes, but that wasn't at the beginning. He decided to premiere it at True False. Because they've been so good to his films.
Yes, right.
And thank God. I mean, I enjoyed it. But who knew it would have a life? You know, you never know.
Right. No, until you get that first, a break, and then you're always on tenterhooks until then. But yes, so I remember it was the opening. No, it was not Film Comet Selects. Excuse me. It was Art of the Real.
Art of the Real.
Yeah. It was the opening night of Art of the Real. Yeah. Glad I remembered that. Which is when Robert came on last time.
Yeah, it was. Right. To be at Lincoln Center as an actress who loves musical theater and all of these other things that I always dreamed of being there, to be there for a film. And at the time, not for that screening, but we had a run at Lincoln Center as well. They gave us a week run afterwards.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Listen Up Philip was playing
Alex
there.
Alex Ross Perry's film, right?
And I have a great scene in that because Robert Greene.
About that. I know he edited that, right?
So. I get a call from a producer saying, hi, we want you in our film. Robert Greene and Sean Price-Williams, who is the cameraman. said, you're great, and we want you, we have to get you in our film. So I shot that with Jonathan Pryce and Jason Schwartzman, and again, because of Robert Greene.
What scene was it? Because I forget now.
The drunk scene where they bring
Yes, they bring these two girls back?
Yep. I'm one of the drunken girls.
Oh, I either forgot or I didn't recognize you.
I that's a compliment.
Yeah, of course it is.
I think people, and it, you know,
I don't remember that
yes,
you were in that.
And that's but what's so great about being an actor. Well, I don't
Your daughter's upstairs. Yep. She comes down and she's yes. like, right.
So for me, it's like, what is making it? I don't know. But when I was at Lincoln Center and I was in two right. movies out of three,
yeah.
and the Godard piece is in the middle, I'm like, and my poster is me. I'm like, I done it. This is it. Well,
yeah,
I don't sure. want right, to be no, anywhere
get it.
Else.
Right. You've realized a dream. But then you're like, well, what the fuck's wrong with Godard? That he didn't
exactly.
cast me in his
exactly.
crappy
There's
movie.
Always something to be.
I'm three-dimensional. 3D. And so the film follows you, for those who haven't seen it, again, the documentary is called, it's something of a little bit of a hybrid, but it's a documentary, and it's kind of has its verite style because there's nobody interviewed. I forget, did you do any voiceover in that? Or
yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
We started with a voiceover,
oh, right.
and that was Robert's.
Yeah.
It was all things that I said originally.
Uh-huh.
There was no script, mm-hmm. but it was something that I mm-hmm. said originally. Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
Hi.
Is it a blue man or is it a?
What's that? Okay, can you talk with them first? Cool. That. Oh, hi. Okay, we're. Yay! We have a meeting. I have another meeting today, which is exciting.
Which is what?
Producer and a casting director of a new theater that they're creating, a summer theater. In Vermont.
Oh, great.
They're doing a replica of the old Globe.
Uh-huh. Shakespeare.
Yeah. And we're
Stratford on Avon.
Yeah.
Where that was.
And we're talking about perhaps collaborating in some way, maybe mm-hmm. Doing Kiss Me Kate and Cole Porter. And so for me, it's a total.
That's called Taming of the Shrew.
Yep. Exactly.
Aren't you at all impressed by my knowledge of the theater? Just kidding.
I am. Of course I am.
I'm only teasing you.
Anyway, we're back to where
we
were.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just talking about reminding people that it's called Actress, and you told about its theatrical run, and then as people listen to this in March of 2015, it is now available on digital platforms. So we're going to tell people that they can go and finally see this thing right in bed. Or
yes.
in their tub or wherever they want to watch it.
Exactly.
Because we don't want to give away too much from the film, but there's a few, the stuff of life occurs. I mean,
yes.
you know, during this period of time. I don't know how much I should say. You know,
much
you guys as far as.
It becomes a lot about real life and Robert.
Your family. And your marriage.
And my family and mm-hmm. In the dissolving, I guess, of that.
Yeah.
That's fair to say. I think that starts from the beginning of the movie. And that was really a touchy situation because we were all friends. And when I agreed to do the film, my partner, Tim, you know, was all for it and just said, well, you know, what else? I was pretty miserable because I wasn't at the time being inspired and I wanted to do something. I thought, should I get back into acting? What should I do? And so he said, well, Robert's hounding you, just do it. Maybe it'll make you happy. Okay. You know, he just wanted me to be happy. He just didn't want to.
Yeah.
It's like, what is wrong? You know,
you mean do his documentary, but you also did end up during the course of the film going down, right? You started getting the bug again too.
Exactly. Well, I was always doing shows in the city with my friends. I have a friend that's a casting director at Blue Man Group, and he is a director that I worked with a while ago, and he composes on the side, and you know, they always had me come in like once a year and sing a song at the Duplex, or which is a cabaret style club in New York. So I always had my, you know, fingers still into artistic acting, just not so big as The Wire, you know. And so it looked like, what is she doing now? Well, I loved playing music and singing with my friends. So I did a show where I just sang one song with a group of people, and the people running the cabaret said, you should do your own show. And I was like, oh, great, thank you. I thought they wanted to rent their space, you know, and so they're trying to convince me that I should rent their space. But the guy called back, Tom, lovely man, and he said, no, we'll give you the space. Like, you're great, and you should. And so I was like, okay, I'll do a show. I mean, who am I to say no to a free space in New York? And I called my friends that I usually work with. And they said, you know, we always pay for that space. So you should take, you know, take the challenge. Mm-hmm. So then I started working with the music director, a director at Blue Man Group mm-hmm. that I was just friends with. Mm-hmm. And I said, will you help me? I have to do a one-woman show. I don't even know what that means. But mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I'll help you. So for 4 months, we start rehearsing and become friends and essentially fall in love. Well, that's all going on during the filming of Actress, that Robert really has no idea any of that's happening, because we're filming in Beacon. And it's also, when do you, as much as you're being real, everyone has a private life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how much to tell Robert and how much. And so finally, when Robert found out that my relationship's dissolving at home, it's not going well, his response was, we'll leave all of that out of the film. Because he didn't think Tim, first of all, would let us have a film, because none of us signed release forms. We were all doing this together.
On faith.
And at any time I could pull out because we were friends, and you couldn't, we couldn't be enemies. You know, he wouldn't put out the movie if I didn't agree.
Unless you're completely on board, then there's no point in having like a contract or something. But once Tim, I guess, agreed, your partner, either father of your children, he agreed to be, he allowed this story to be part of the film.
Which was huge and so brave of him.
What was his rationale? Do you know?
Well, I do know. He, ironically, and the only way this movie exists is because Tim went to film school.
Oh.
He studied at San Francisco State and loves Cassavetes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, moved to New York to be a writer, to write screenplays. Yeah. I mean, he lived in L.A. for a while, tried to make it, and then finally moved to New York, and then got into the bar. But, you know, was waiting tables, essentially started owning his own bar because he had to make a living.
Yeah, and you're so good at it. And
then, he's very good at it. Exactly. Yeah. But once he saw some footage of what Robert was doing, he said, I hate this film. I don't want to. It's heartbreaking.
Yes.
But it needs to be out there. And I think he always knew that, you know, I think he always respected me as an artist, and he still does. And so he was like, this is interesting. And if so, he avoids it. He doesn't want to see it.
He never saw it.
So I think he saw the whole thing.
Okay. But he wasn't at the premiere.
He's not, you know, he doesn't want to part anything to do with it, but he saw it, what the footage is.
Did your kids see it?
Yes. My Henry just saw it.
How old is Henry?
He's 8.
Okay.
And there was a premiere in Cleveland near, I mean, essentially it was like a reunion from all my friends, my mom, and my sister called Cedar Lee, the theater, and said, my sister's in a great movie, you need to screen it. And they said, oh, we've actually heard of it. You know, it's in the New York Times.
This is up in Ohio, right?
In Ohio. Yeah, that's nice. So we went there to do a screening, and I had to get up and speak. And I thought, and so my sister was having my niece see it. Mm-hmm. And I said, Henry, do you want to see the film? Because he's what my, he,
yeah,
no, you know, right. And he
it's
said,
be weird if you
I
don't.
Think so. Yeah. Sure. And so he saw it. And my sister, Stella hasn't seen it. You know, I think it made him realize that I was an actress. I mean, he says, he'll say, my mom, the actress.
Right.
And
right.
I think he completely respects it. And, but he also gets that it's a movie
because
it's,
yeah.
So he's like, well, that happened, but out of sequence. And, well, wasn't, you know, I think in a way it was great to not keep it from him because he now says, oh, yeah, well, I was there for all of that, but it didn't happen that way, you know.
Yeah. Well, again, my kid also, I have a son, actually. Yeah. And he's a little older than your son, but, and his name, actually, we were supposed to be Henry, to be honest.
Really?
And then we changed it to Jacob. Yeah. But he, he's just saw his mother's in the play, and he sees her in movies and TV stuff. It's interesting to, but he takes it all for, he's seen it much more, I think, because she's been always doing it.
Right. Whereas, Henry, I think it was hard on him at first because it took me away from him.
Yeah.
I mean, Henry knew me. At one point, he said, Mom, you know, what do you do?
Right.
And that's when I was like, oh, my God, I have to get out of the house because I was a real stay-at-the-home mom. I mean, I was, making bread and knitting, and I was going to do it well.
Yeah.
And when I realized I was playing the role of stay-at-home mom. really well.
And there's no award for that.
No.
Which shows you our priorities because in life we give awards
pretending.
People that pretend and they give them, and they make tons of money. And we don't give it to the most important people.
No. Yeah, it's all the fabrication that we like.
So you're making artisanal bread at home.
Exactly. And, so I think Henry, it was hard on him because he's like, when are you coming home? Where are you going? Why can't I go with you?
Yeah.
I mean, because last year I got to go so many beautiful places and film festivals and meet all of these amazing people. And,
Make so many new friends.
So many new friends. It's incredible. I can't believe now I'm like, I can't believe how boring life was before.
No. Well, it's interesting. It almost seems like you responded more to this case where you're not acting per se. It's, you know, it's real life. It was more thrilling, it sounds like, than even your experience on the set of The Wire.
Far more thrilling.
Far more. Okay.
And, you know...
It's okay. This is the soundtrack of New York City.
Yeah.
That same ambulance has been in about 20 of my shows now. I'm convinced it's the same guy.
He knows. Yeah. This is a... As an actor, first of all...
Yeah.
It's everything I wanted because I want to collaborate. As an actor, you're always put in a desperate position where it seems like you need something from the other person because without the collaborators, you're nothing. And so to meet people, it always felt like a desperate act, like you need something from them instead of coming on as a peer.
Right.
So as a subject of a documentary, all of that wipes away. I mean, I meet all these filmmakers, but once they see the film, they know me.
Yeah.
And it's like, let's work together. Okay, let's work together.
So have you gotten work from the theater?
I've gotten a lot of work from it.
Have you?
And Robert said I would, and I didn't believe it.
Right, you got the Listen Up Philip.
Listen Up Philip. And then I just shot a short film in Dallas with Jason Reimer, who wrote it. They're with the Texas Theater, which is a refurbished film venue. Right. Awesome. We met them at the Dallas Film Festival, hung out a little bit, and I got a call saying, hey, we've written something. Mm-hmm. We're going to fly you in.
Wonderful.
I've got scripts right now written by Katie Orr from Atlanta. Oh, sure. She is like, I want you to be in my movie, and I was going to write it for you. I've been reading it, and I just can't wait to shoot it.
I was going to invite you to co-host my show, but I guess you're too busy.
Bummer. I'm sure I could find time.
Okay, well, you know, I enjoyed it when I saw it, and it was for The Art of the Real. Now, remember, it's such a great film. I hope everybody goes and checks it out after they hear this, if they haven't seen it yet. Robert Greene is the crew on this, pretty much. Did Sean help shoot some
One
of the,
day, Sean came in, and A.J. Schnock came AJ. In. I was in L.A., and so A.J. shot me in L.A. Okay. I was there visiting for Blue Man Group, and... Bill Ross came in for one day,
brothers.
Just visiting. But these are all Robert's friends.
It's nice because he can kind of count them in on the crew. Yeah.
Exactly. And it maybe, was just fun to
have
them. Yeah, I got
you. Right. Well, I'm going to South By this year, and Ross Brothers have a film in there called Western. I'm really anxious to see.
Yes, I can't wait. And they're doing a new project, I guess, Robert was in on in the coming up, too.
It's very clubby. It's called Actress, and it's about Brandy Burry. And you can see it for sure on iTunes.
Yep. iTunes, VOD, Prime. Cable VOD.
Oh, cable. And it's at the top of the menu.
I know. It's that, brilliant.
Because it's called Actress. So people will actually watch it. You'll probably do well on VOD because they'll see Actress, and that's kind of got an interesting name. They'll say,
I hope people listen to it, and I hope it starts a conversation that is well overdue.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, it was just all fell together so beautifully. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, anytime. Come back with the next.
Time I have a project.
And you can also see Brandy in a very funny scene in Listen Up Philip, which I'm sure will be out any day now on also digital platforms. Is it already out?
I think it's out.
Already? It did come out right in the fall, didn't it? Because it came out right after the New York Film Festival. Is that when, didn't it?
Yeah,
almost like right after. So it came out in October.
It premiered at NFF, yeah.
Right, and then it came out in October theatrically, right? It was right after the New York Film Festival. So it is, I guess, going on 4 or 5 months. Anyway, thanks again, Brandy. Okay, so again, Actress, available digitally on various platforms. Go check it out. It's great. If you're in the arts, or if you're married, or if you're not in either of those categories, you should go see the film. You should go check out the film. So go and rent or download or buy, stream the show. Do yourself a favor. It's highly entertaining. And I think everybody can relate to it. It's worthwhile. Now my conversation with Joel Petraicus again. This is the Animal Trilogy. It's so much fun. There's a scene in the movie, which has gotten a lot of notoriety, where he's gotten a hotel, a really nice, swanky hotel room. By he, I mean the lead actor, Josh Burge. He's got a hotel room, and he orders up room service. He gets a plate of spaghetti and meatballs, and there is this unforgettable take of him eating this meal, which is price of admission right there. Anyway, it's a funny movie. I'm a big fan of this guy. I hope to have Joel on many, many more times to come in the coming years. So this is my conversation with filmmaker Joel Petraicus. Well, it's always fun to have somebody come back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. That means I'm doing something right, I guess.
By doing something right, I assume you mean having another film out.
Yeah.
And then having press around it, not being on Filmwax Radio. No, Adam, I do mean that.
No.
I'm kidding around. Just fucking with you. You are, absolutely. And people really are connecting with the films.
Well, at least the critics are. We'll see what happens this Friday.
Yeah, I know.
It's a whole different story when you bring it out to the public.
Right. I just love that idea, like, there's people and then there's critics.
Absolutely, man.
You know, it could be your fourth, you know, in the trilogy.
They're totally two different people, critics and normal people.
Right. So. Yeah. It's true. I used to review films. Like, I used to write reviews for a couple of different outlets or whatever, and I never liked it.
Really?
Well, mostly because I just felt like I wasn't contributing in any special way. Like, I just felt I read reviews mostly for information, just to know what films are about, what context they have at that moment. So I read some of the reviewers I trust, but I'm like, I wouldn't read me. Why? You know, I read these guys.
I originally went to school for film and journalism, and that was my big goal, is to be a critic, and then like make, you know, a feature every couple of years, and then in the meantime, write reviews. And you guys, you know that big, thick, like, video guide? It's called Video Hound's Golden Movie Retriever. It's like old video store.
Yeah.
I still write for that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been like 10 years I've been writing for that catalog.
But are you writing reviews, too? Or are you writing synopses? Or
they're mostly like, they're like snarky synopses a little... some little witty line at the end about whether we liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wrote a thing for Talkhouse, so that was cool.
Oh, yeah. What was your film or filmmaker?
Lazarus Effect.
Remind me of who's in... I did read a couple
Mark,
of reviews.
Mark Duplass is the star, and
Olivia Wilde, yes.
And
science fiction-y or
science
medical.
Fiction horror. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of a site that's pushing like positive things, so I wrote a discussion piece about the film, not so much a review.
Right, no, I know. That. Yeah, I like what he's doing over there, Nick Doss. I got to have him on actually to talk about
that.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It's awesome.
You read that?
Science stuff.
TJ? Yeah. We're sitting with Joel Petraicus, who was here two summers ago during Northside Film Festival with Ape.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that sounds about right.
Right, yeah. And that was nice that came about. And now you're back with Buzzard, which is being retrofitted as a kind of a trilogy of called the Animal Trilogy.
I kind of had that idea.
Oh, you did. All
right. When I said the title for Ape was going to be Ape, and then someone's like, "Well, you can't just make two." I was like, "I never thought I'd make a third one, like another movie with an animal title." And never. Right. I was like, "All right, well, yeah, sure." Mostly because I just didn't think I'd make another movie after Ape.
Really?
I did not. You know, with Ape, I was shooting for the ultimate goal is like, I want to make like the coolest movie in the Michigan film circuit scene. And that's as far as I thought it was going to go, you know, like play like three or four festivals in Michigan and then, you know, lose all of never make a penny off of it and whatever. And then, so when it kind of had a little bit of success, it was like, all right, I got some money to make the third one. Let's finish off this trilogy for sure.
Was that success? And I know it's relative what you're talking about, but it was that success based largely or in great part to the International Film Festival press you got?
Yeah, and mostly because I won a bunch of money at its premiere, like an award, the Best Emerging Director Award at Locarno,
yeah,
which like allowed me to quit my day job and be like just be a quote unquote filmmaker. So
that moment when that happened, what was that like?
Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah,
it was actually could have been better. I don't know if I've ever told anybody this, but so I was sleeping in my hotel in Switzerland, and the actor Joshua and one of the producers, Joshua Burge, and one of the producers, Mike Saunders, ran into two of the heads of the festival like the day before the awards or the day before they announced it and said, "You guys won Best Emerging Director and Best First Feature." And so they freaked out and they came and woke me up, and I was like, Best First Feature came with a $60,000 award, and I was like, oh, holy crap, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And we were celebrating, excited, and later I found out it was Best First Feature Special Mention, which does not have a cash award allowed to. So it was kind of this weird, bittersweet moment. It was like, all right, well, we won some money, not the insane amount of money that I just thought, but... Right.
It's almost then you're like, somebody just stole $45,000 out of my pocket.
Yeah, it was weird, but...
Yeah,
that was the big moment where it was kind of just validation.
Yeah,
and
totally. Yeah,
and you know, financial validation is the best kind of validation. Yeah, so.
True. Yeah, what better way? And it, like you say, it gave you that seed money to put into Buzzard.
Yeah.
Right.
I mostly used a lot of that to buy all new equipment. But then, as soon as we were done shooting, I just sold all that equipment on eBay. So it kind of balanced out. I kind of wish I would have kept some of that. Well, it's like when you're shooting digital, you shoot on a camera and then 6 months from there, it's going to be obsolete. Yeah. So that was kind of my goal. But now I do have to rebuy a lot of like sound gear and everything.
Oh, you got rid of that too, even though that does not necessarily.
No,
do they do stuff like make the equipment incompatible?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I mean, everything
crazy.
Just like comes on SD card or whatever. So lenses are always good. I actually sold most of the lenses we bought from Buzzard to my DP so he can use them on the next feature still. So that works out.
Who's that?
Adam Minnick. Okay.
Get a little shit.
Yeah, he'll actually be coming in later today.
Oh, sweet.
Just to hang out and party. Mm. But his flight got messed up today.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is Joshua coming in too?
No.
Okay. He's like, I'm so over it.
he wanted to.
He's
because
now a big star.
Yeah, he wanted to because he's literally just sitting in a hotel in Calgary for like weeks and weeks on call.
I've heard about like getting gigs like that. Yeah,
he's but he's not getting called to the set for another like 2 weeks. But they still want him there.
Yep,
just in
it's
case
insurance.
Yeah,
they can't afford not to have him there. Exactly, like
it's wild. I mean, that's great for him, but I'm sure he'd like to tour around a little bit and do some interviews for this. But he's been snatched up by the Birdman himself.
Is that right? Oh, right.
Alejandro Iñárritu.
Did read about that in the New York Times.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, that's really great to see. I think it's terrific for you. All right, so let's also get out of the way. On Wednesday, you're going to be at BAM.
Yeah, it'll be the first screening.
I'm not going to have this done by tomorrow. What am I thinking about? You will have had, after we this is up, the trilogy will be shown in one night at BAM.
So, if this comes out after, I'll say, it was an amazing night. It was great. Sold out screening. Great Q&A.
Yeah. Thank you, by the way, for mentioning me as an inspiration. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. I was number one, and people stood up and applauded when I said your name. I couldn't believe it. Everybody knew you.
I can't either.
The BAM screening was the first Animal Trilogy screening in its entirety. So
that's pretty amazing.
I applaud anybody who sits through, 4 hours of my work, but...
But apparently, I guess people have bought tickets, so if there are a lot of people that are going to be there.
Was a great turnout.
You going, TJ? TJ, you actually watched, did you get to watch Buzzard? Okay. Did you get to see 8-Bit? Okay, no, he's in film school, so he's got a lot of work.
NYU?
No, I'm in my last semester of Brooklyn College.
Oh, okay, awesome.
Yeah. But that's great. And then it's going to have a Buzzer will have a theatrical at Lincoln Center at the Eleanor Buna Monroe Theater, I guess. Is that where they're doing it?
I'm not sure what theater, but
that's like the film center. Excuse me. Their film center, which has like three rooms in it.
Okay. Yeah.
I assume that's where they're going to do it.
Yeah, this Friday, Lincoln Center. which is totally cool. But I will be back in Grand Rapids to kind of usher it in for the home crowd at the UICA.
That's great. So it's going to open in New York City and in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
It's opening
Friday.
In like 18 cities on Friday.
Okay. 16 others that I was going to get to, I promise you, out there, because we do not discriminate. We love all. I mean, you know, seriously, it's like I think that's fantastic when a film this size gets into 18 cities.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful. Yeah. It gives you hope, too.
And we have like we have other members of our posse that are going to kind of rep it in other cities. My brother lives in Seattle, and he's the one who designed the glove, so he's going to kind of do some Q&As or intros or something weird. I don't know. So
yeah.
And we have somebody that might be there in Denver for it. So we're trying to cover all territory. It opens in Chicago a week later, so I'll be going there to hype it up in Chicago and do all that stuff.
Great. Yeah, that's relatively close for you, right?
Yeah, it's just like 2.5-hour drive. They're doing two midnight screenings at the Music Box, so that's going to be like totally awesome.
Yeah. Totally. Are you going to go on to Film Spotting? Did you get those guys to interview you? You know who I'm talking
about? They never write me back. They never write me back. Yeah. Like Michael, sometimes I'll tag Michael Phillips in one of the emails and he writes me back.
Yeah.
But Adam and Josh, I never hear back.
Interesting.
I think because I have often, I'm sure Adam's got a good memory because I sometimes occasionally send him an email correcting something he'll say on the air. I'm sure that's bugged him. His pronunciation of Gus Van Sant versus Gus Van Zant changes every other time. I'm like, well, how do you say it, man?
That's a tricky one because there are a lot of Van Zants. But he'll
say Gus Van Sant, and then he'll say Gus Van Zant the next time. And I was like, how do you say it? You're driving me crazy. I can't figure out how you pronounce it. That's the only problem.
Because you're getting past a one mistake on a name. You're actually criticizing his inability to commit, and it's far more.
It's just commit to one.
Commit
of
to
them.
The wrong name at least, and I'll respect you for that.
Yeah, but I'm a huge film. I've been listening to Film Spotting forever.
Yeah, and, me too.
And even their little offshoot SVU.
Yeah,
all that stuff. So
Matt Singer said he would come on. He hasn't gotten back yet, but I'm going to get him. I'll get him. He's already said he would.
Yeah.
So it's out, and now I'm saying it out there. So
yeah, he seems like a busy guy too. I've never met him. But.
Yeah, but you can do 20 minutes on FilmWax Radio. Come on.
Matt Singer, come do FilmWax.
And I also have written to Adam Kempinar, too, and he has not gotten back. So, you know, but I imagine that every filmmaker probably has reached out to those guys. That's, you know, but I see their sweet spot in terms of who they like. They're the filmmakers they like. And their idea of independent. I mean, this is not a criticism of their taste because they have very good taste, but their idea of indie is like a serious notch above like what's truly indie in some ways. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, any of the filmmakers they like follow and talk about nonstop have no distribution issues. Their films are going to be distributed,
right?
You know, and are kind of getting a lot of Hollywood money or certainly actors of that caliber.
Yeah. I think the most, they do talk about Alex Ross Perry though, once in a while,
that's
which
true.
Is cool.
Right.
Like, that always that's surprises true. Me that, he's on their radar, mostly probably because he's working with Jason Schwartzman now, and Elizabeth Moss and
those big names. But it's interesting to see that. And then to go back, Alex, of course, was on the jury at Locarno, right?
Yeah,
that was a big reason, maybe why.
Yeah,
so you have a connection there.
Yeah, and although he claims that the rest of the jury was the ones that made the decision because he was the new guy, but I'm sure it didn't hurt.
All right, well, let's give that's what's going on. You're going to be in many, many cities around the country opening with Buzzard on Friday. Today's the 3rd, right? So Friday is the
6th.
6th, thank you. March 6th. You'll be opening in 18 cities. 16?
I don't know.
You say?
Around 16.
16 cities plus.
On March. On this Friday.
This Friday, March 6th, and I will have this show up by then. You know, that's the goal. And then we'll see what happens there. It probably depends a lot on those cities, you know. And then this, again, is the 3rd in a trilogy where you have made a film on a jagged pill of a character portrayed by Josh Burge. He doesn't play the same guy, but he's playing somebody who's...
It's my Angry Young Man trilogy.
There you go.
He's a guy who's fighting back against somebody he doesn't really... see,
yeah,
the city man, the Midwest,
right?
It's got him down.
This occasion, he's and please jump in. He works in a mortgage company, and he temps. I mean, he doesn't even really have a
right.
regular position. And one way he compensates for the income is he takes office. This is an example of his behavior. He steals office equipment, brings it to the local Office Max, Staples, what have you, and tries to sell it back. You know, he's like he's playing every angle, every scam he can manage. It's not just the money for him, right? It's really just...
He gets off on it. He's a very low-time grifter who's doing it just for the sense of revenge or, you know.
Right.
Marty, why do you even need this stuff? You know, we don't even have this type of printer.
Store credit or cash?
Come on, dude.
How long was that break?
3 hours.
3 hours? Dude, this job is awesome.
No, it's not. Bogus.
I have an easy job for you, Marty.
I'll get to it, Carol, but, you know, I got a lot going on around here, so...
You can't just take someone's check and make it yours, man. It doesn't work like that.
There's probably surveillance cameras all over my place.
Shit.
Is 7:30 for Detroit leave yet?
Don't call the cops. It's not...
Call the cops.
A genuinely brilliant contemporary satire of workplace frustrations like Office Space on crack.
In a way, the amount of thought and energy goes into that whole thing is could be, you know, harnessed towards and put towards something other than that.
Yeah, people
his thing.
Brand him as a slacker, and I don't see that because he's always doing something. He's like, even on his lunch break, he's trying to scam somebody out of $50, so... He's a petty idealist.
Mm-hmm. Did you know somebody like this at all, or did you fantasize about?
Well, you know, they say you write what you know. I did temp in a mortgage company for a year, and I was the one in charge of ordering the office supplies. And I'll just leave it at that.
Gotcha.
I don't want to incriminate myself any further.
Yeah. What's the statute of limitations on all that?
Yeah, that was like 10 years ago, so I think I should be clear by now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
New York Times asked me to name the mortgage company, and then I did, and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. That was stupid.
Did they print it?
No, luckily.
So. Who was it you talked to?
Ben.
Okay, yeah. Ben over at the New York Times, and how was that? Where'd you meet him?
Never met him. We just did it over the phone.
Okay.
And he called me and Josh, and it was like...
Oh, right, you had a conference
call. Josh is in Calgary, and I was in Grand Rapids, and... Mm-hmm. We just talked for a long time, 2 hours maybe.
Really?
So I was expecting the interview to take up like the whole arts and leisure section of the paper. But
that would have been good.
Yeah.
Right? Like a special issue.
Yeah, exactly. The Buzzard edition.
That would have been amazing. Yeah. That's got to be huge. So did you get a lot of calls and like emails from family and friends?
Not really, just because...
Nobody gets New York Times out there.
Nobody gets New York Times. Like,
especially
one of our producers bought the actual hard copy, and I was like, I was like, it's $6. You don't need to buy that.
Is it?
Yeah.
It was a Sunday edition.
It was a Sunday edition.
Jeez, I didn't even know that.
So she was like, no, we have to get it. We have to, like, frame it or something. I was like, you know, that's so cheesy. Mm-hmm. But then today I was at the head of Oscilloscope. I was staying with Dan, and... His fiance was one of the producers and writers for Obvious Child, and in their bathroom they have the framed article about Obvious Child from the New York Times. So I took a picture and I was like, told Ashley, I was like, "You're right. I guess you're supposed to frame the New York Times write up." So, yeah.
Is Ashley the? Did I meet her? Nighthawk when we?
She was there. That's
that
right.
Was her, right.
Yeah, she was with me. Yeah.
Oh, very good. Well, I definitely think you should frame it. I think it's wonderful, especially because the New York Times printed edition is going to be. It's $6. It's like a niche publication.
Or yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
So I'm glad she got it.
That's amazing.
I didn't think I was going to be a fan of Obvious Child. I thought the romantic comedy tag was like, but I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved Obvious Child.
What'd you love about it?
Jenny Slate, so funny. Totally like natural, not acting at all. Just, she's great.
Well, it appears that way, but she might say, hey, I was acting.
I know. Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm giving her a compliment by saying it was totally...
Josh has that same kind of, I'd say...
I hope so.
He doesn't
look
like he's acting.
That's good. I mean, it's hard for me to tell, obviously, because, you know, I wrote those lines. But, yeah, I mean, he's a great actor. People are picking up on that, for sure.
Well, you're getting some really good attention for the films. You've gotten a lot of awards. Your career is on a trajectory. And so you could make a film with Jenny Slate. I mean, obviously, that
you
could
think
be.
So, dude. I'm trying to raise the money for the next feature. It's not happening.
Well, I didn't say that. Not that we have to announce it. I mean, that's you can decide whether or not.
No, please but, announce it. So if anyone's so listening people, wants to help fund the next good. Feature.
All right. So we're originally. This is now is also a. This is a podcast / crowdfunding.
Yeah.
App.
Yeah, moment. I guess I should mention our Kickstarter too for the Buzzard video game that's launched.
Oh, yeah. Talk
a
about
few
that.
Days ago. Yeah, we're designing a video game based on the movie Baby Castles. The video game. There's like a collective of video game developers in Brooklyn. They're setting it up. It's going to be like totally retro 8-bit, and they're even making like a full-size arcade version of it and everything. Like where you can, it's like all based on the movie. You know, you're putting like ranch on a pizza and aiming it, and you have to spell Jakotansky at some point, or else. I haven't played it yet. I'm just kind of consulting on it, but they're going to make it
also as a
like a stand, yeah, with a joystick version of it and everything.
Well, like you'd find in an arcade, as you said.
Yeah, we're kind of.
Are there arcades? Yeah, of course there are.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm kind of going back and forth on who gets the arcade version of it.
Uh-huh.
I want that.
Sure, of course you do.
Of course, if you contribute $10,000, you get your own version on the Kickstarter. So if there's any crazy wealthy guys who love
not crazy,
just yeah. Fanatical
ambitious.
Video games.
Yeah,
you should check out that Kickstarter campaign.
True philanthropist types.
Yeah, that love independent film and old video games.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that there's probably a few.
Yeah. If I had a lot of money, I would totally do that.
Yeah. So. And then we can cast Jenny Slate in the film. I think that's a good.
I'd have to think
that would be a good combination. Jenny Slate and Joe Patrykis.
Except I'd have to start writing a role for women. If I was gonna do that.
I think that's good. No, I think you do. I should.
That's something I get flack from once in a while in Q&A is that I don't have any good roles, strong roles for women. But if you watch the movies, like they said, like women aren't put in a positive light. But I don't think anybody in my movies are put in a positive light.
Right? Women should be thanking you.
Yeah,
for not putting
don't
writing.
You don't want me to write.
Yeah,
especially from. I mean, I'm just like you know, I don't understand. You know, I'm through and through a guy, a dude. And if I felt like if I tried to write a female character, it would come out really false and kind of flat and.
But maybe you can kind of quasi workshop it. Like in other words, you know, like Mike Lee, where you know you work with them to develop the character.
Yeah, like I'd love to be able to work. There's a lot of guys here, even new here in New York. Like Nathan Silver does that.
Right.
We're good friends,
yeah.
And he wanted me to work on a film with him and Mike Ott. And I was like, I don't work that way. I can't just like sit down and let's figure out the scene as we're filming or something. And I'm too much of a control freak. I think to be able to do that.
I was in a Nathan Silver film.
Which one?
Yeah. Well, what happened? Well, first of all,
did you get cut?
I got cut. I did get cut. You saw that coming. Yeah. Which I even knew because from after we shot the scene, which was in Williamsburg in this apartment, and it was like the guy from High Maintenance was in the scene, and Dustin DeFay was in the scene, and all these other people I know, and then. I just said, well, what's the rest of the movie? Like, I needed a context for it. And the way he described it about this home for, like, pregnant single girls, and this was
uncertain terms.
And it just, I'm like, what is this party that we're doing have to do with that? It just didn't seem, but he loved what I was doing because he asked me to improvise. And then what he ended up doing is using a piece of our podcast interview in the car radio. At the very when the guy is approaching the house.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
He's listening to the radio. That's me.
I didn't pick up on it.
Well,
that was you.
How would you? Yeah, I mean, of course, right. Unless you knew. And then it's mentioned. I think my name's in the.
Did you go up to the Silver House?
No, north? I didn't have anything to do with that. But I was at Woodstock Film Festival, where he and the gang showed up. They went to have the New York premiere there, I think. And then his mom, who I knew because he and his mom were on the podcast with Soft in the Head.
Oh, okay.
So, Cindy. And so what happened was I rushed. I knew I wasn't going to make – I had already seen the movie, but I rushed to go to, because the Woodstock Film Festival was in these different towns upstate. So I rushed to the theater where I wanted to be there for the Q&A to see everybody. Mm-hmm. And I got there just as they were starting, and I'm walking down the aisle. And he goes, "Hey, it's Adam." And then I go, "You can moderate the Q&A because nobody from the festival was there to do it."
Well, that's perfect.
So it was really funny. And then so it was nice. But so I kind of feel like I'm part of that film. But
that's a weird story.
Long anecdote. I apologize.
No, it's a weird story because from what I remembered, Nathan showed some other film, like maybe Soft in the Head or Exit Elena, at the Woodstock Film Festival. And his mom, Cindy, loved that area so much because she went there to – that they bought the house near there because they just fell in love with that
area.
That's
right. Yeah, and they sold their house in like outside Boston.
It's totally wild. And she's great. Her
And then he went and shot – you know, took over the house there and drove her crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, they have an interesting dynamic, those two.
Yeah. She loves him, though. She's proud of him and his artfulness. And if you listen to that, she talks about it on the show.
I got to track down that interview.
Yeah. So, in other words, next time around, bring your mom or dad.
Yeah. My dad comes with me once in a while. He actually came – that's where I met Nathan's parents – in Vienna with my dad like 4 months ago or 5 months ago or something. So that was pretty weird.
Yeah, that's right. And parents of your generation now, maybe they finally have some money to do things like to have that freedom to be able to go.
My dad just retired, so this was like my retirement invitation to him. Come and enjoy Europe with me for 3 weeks. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so nice.
We just bounced around.
Isn't that great?
From festival to festival.
Wow.
Everybody treated him really well.
You guys are close that way?
Yeah.
Obviously, you have to be, right?
Yeah. I think my mom's next tour. I'm going to try and drag my mom around. So
it sort of juxtaposes with your films, which are, you know, center on a very difficult personality, you know, as a main character. And so you would think the guy who's creating these movies is that way, but...
No, I actually come from... My parents are super nice and supportive, and I've always been awesome and... Never weird or dark moments between any of us.
Yeah,
that's just me stealing things from other movies I've seen. You know,
and you mentioned you have a brother.
Yeah,
right. Who's is sort of peripherally also involved in the film world.
Yeah. He's. I mean, that's when I first started. You know, making movies in high school with him. Like we'd shoot Super 8 animations and everything. So he's always at one level or another, been helping out with these movies. Always like working on the artwork. And he designed the glove and does a lot of like makeup effects, and then I have a sister who helps somehow, however she can too. So,
creating a dynasty,
sure.
Now I remember in the New York Times article as well that you did mention that you really did like shooting in your neck of the woods in Michigan, and I wondered if you were beginning to think like about maybe shooting somewhere else if that was something you were going to.
You know, it's
or
like
you still like doing that.
Yeah, it's mostly about the money, like
resources.
Yeah, where you get the resources? Like, you don't really need permits, like in Michigan, to film, and especially we shot a lot of Buzzard in Detroit, and no one's gonna bug you, no one's gonna care, and you just can't afford to shoot anywhere else where you need permits and insurance and like people to like block off streets, like that stuff, like that stuff, like that feels like construction work to me, not like making a movie. Like that stuff I hate. Like even like, you know, like a bunch of grips setting up tracks and spending like 2 hours to set up big lighting. Like that's not art. That's construction, man. That's not. So that's just not how I like to do it.
Right, and necessarily. Requires a much bigger crew, producers. You need a lot more.
I just don't like that. I like to just, you know, work with the same people and not have strict call times. If we want to sleep in an extra hour, just text everybody like, let's get up at noon instead of 11 today.
Yeah,
you know, it's very laid back, and I'm kind of a lazy guy, so that
And then you can also, I think, you know, people would definitely also, if you did want to use some cast outside of the, you know, Michigan, not that you should, but if you did, I'm sure people would be happy to come, and you could have plenty of space to put them up too, probably. Cause,
yeah, I'm always open to the idea of working with like actors from out of town.
Right.
And we're actually looking for two actors right now and having a really hard time. So things never get easier. It seems like they get easier with all this press and publicity, but it's...
Well,
it's always
right.
a drag.
Yeah, some things might, but maybe getting an email returned. I don't know. Maybe not, though.
Yeah, I get emails returned, I guess. You know. But
yeah.
For the next feature, we're working with a production company here in New York, Uncorked Productions, that are kind of...
Who's that?
Andrew Corkin and Brian Riesberg, and they're kind of helping with some of the paperwork stuff that I don't like to do and helping to kind of find funding and casting, things that are kind of a headache for for me and my crew. So, it's going really well.
Oh, good. So you have another project, obviously.
Yeah, we're trying to shoot it next month.
Oh, that's soon, my God.
Yeah.
You are working on the Nathan Silver clip.
No, that guy does one a year. I'm shooting for one every 2 years.
Right.
But or like shooting one every year and a half is where it's getting to.
Yeah.
But well, that means able to spend longer in post on it instead of rushing. So.
Yeah. I mean, he just doesn't need to ever find an apartment. He's just trying to save rent because he could just live on the festival circuit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like, perpetually.
He
right?
always has something out.
Yeah.
He always, we were in Poland and he was there showing
up to
uncertain terms, but he had I can't remember the order. He had something else. He was showing one, and they
something
had another
like
film in the post-production.
Fucking crazy or something. What's the next one? Like, not fucking crazy.
I think
crazy.
He's working on Pervert, but maybe I'm not supposed to announce that yet.
Too late.
He's got so much stuff going on. I can't keep up with that guy.
No. Well, let's remind people: Buzzard is going to be screening in at least 16 cities around the country, including here in New York City, where
here
we're
in
sitting.
New York City, yes.
At the Lincoln Center, probably at the Eleanor Bionin Monroe Film Center at Lincoln Center, starting Friday the 6th of March. And also, it's going to be in Grand Rapids.
At the UICA.
UICA.
It'll also be available on VOD the same day. So
right.
If you don't live in New York or you can't get out to the theater, you can watch it at home.
On iTunes.
But the best way to watch it is at the theater, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Right. And if you're in Michigan, if you're near Grand Rapids, the theater, is it the UIC?
It's the Urban UIC. Institute for Contemporary Arts.
Theater.
And it'll play there for 2 weeks. And it's also playing at Cinema Detroit for other Michiganers.
So you're going to be in Grand Rapids.
Yeah. Doing like intros, Q&As.
Right. So people can, parties and that kind of thing. So if you want to hang out with Joel Patrykis and others from the film, but not Josh.
Not Josh. He's hanging out with DiCaprio and Tom Hardy right now. So
it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's
that's insane.
It's totally crazy.
But he has that look that I could see, you know, I want that guy in my movie because he has such a distinct quality. His look is, and you know, and then he's a good actor, so that helps.
Yeah, I've just been waiting for that to happen.
Yeah,
I knew it was going to happen, that someone would kind of sweep him away.
Yeah.
So that's nothing but awesome for him, especially if we can. But now we got to try and negotiate to get him back, which is totally surreal.
He'll give you the discount.
I hope so. He's all SAG now and everything.
Of course,
so.
Yeah.
He's on board to work with us still, obviously. I hope he just... I'd rather have him work with Martin Scorsese than me, just for his own sake, because you know, that would be a dream. But whatever. Nothing but great things for him.
Well, I hope the same and wish the same, rather, for you. And I hope we'll run into each other soon with the next project.
Yeah, thanks, Adam.
Thank you. Coming up on the show, we have more great segments. We have the filmmaking team behind it's not a hybrid, it's a documentary. It's called Charlie Victor Romeo. And if you haven't seen it, you are not going to believe it. It's coming out on Netflix in just a few days, so we're going to have those guys on, and it is a fantastic conversation. Also coming up on the show is the filmmaker Eugene Green and his film La Sapienza, a terrific film. I saw it at the New York Film Festival last fall, and I talked to Eugene, who was actually in New York at the time, and he was delightful, and I can't wait to play that for you. We have coming up Jeff Reichardt and Faria Zaman. Their film, Remote Area Medical, will be available digitally in a few days, and so we're going to have them come on. We have coming up my next in the series of segments on The Missing Girl, the director, A.D. Calvo, he goes by. That's going to be an interesting conversation. Alex is become a good friend of mine. I really adore him, and I love the film. But it's been having a hard time. It has not gotten into the major American festivals yet. I think they're missing it. I don't think they get it. But that's just my humble opinion. But Alex is going to be coming on, and then we'll play the final episode in that series, and it's going to be with Mike Ryan, and we'll do that in a few weeks. He's the producer. Also coming up in the next couple of weeks is my conversation with Eric Steele, who made The Bridge 10 years ago. They're coming up to the 10th year anniversary. That's an unforgettable documentary, and so much more. And then we'll be posting lots of stuff from South by Southwest, so... Thank you so much, by the way. You guys are incredibly supportive, and I appreciate it very much. If you're up here in the Northeast and you've been dealing with all the cold and all the snow, my heart goes out to you. I know what you mean. I know what you feel. We're only weeks away from the spring, and you know, that always gives one a sense of rebirth and renewal and hope, right? Just only weeks away. So hang on. You know, if you got that seasonal depression, hold on. We're almost there. One thing you can do is, you know, reach out. Let me know you're there. Let me know what you're thinking and feeling. You know, I'm a sensitive guy, and I'm interested to know what you're going through. You can reach out to me. You can email me directly at adam@filmwax.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter. Just please do stay in touch. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. This is Film Wax Radio. I'm your host, Adam Shartoff. This has been episode number 277 of the podcast, presented by Rooftop Films. Thank you for listening. Until next time, take care.